throughout are quite as crazy as John's ideas, unfortunately. But okay, so today I'm going to talk a little bit about methods to detect neutrino coherent scattering, timescales for doing this, as well as ideas for new physics that we can learn. So this is, in sort of all these discussions we're having, this is probably certainly in the next few years one of the more guaranteed, you know, new signals out there. Okay, so the question is, what can we do to exploit this? And this is an interesting idea that sort of hits at several different topics across, you know, astrophysics, high energy physics, and nuclear physics. And I'll try to at least give you a flavor of what we can learn in each of those fields from this detection here. Okay, so when I was a graduate student, I heard all those talks about, you know, detecting SUSY dark matter three different ways, right? Indirect detection, direct detection, colliders. So nobody cares about that anymore, I guess, right? But now, you know, we have a similar version of this for light dark matter, right? I saw this at the March meeting, right? You know, we have so here's sort of the three-pronged ways to detect neutrino coherent scattering, if you will. So so we heard a nice talk by Malcolm this morning, focusing a lot on what's going on in direct dark matter searches and how those will be sensitive to coherent neutrino scattering, and some flavor for what physics we can do there. So my talk will be a bit complementary to that, in the sense that I'll add in a little bit more about what we can learn from reactor sources as well as accelerator sources, and how all these detection mechanisms combine to give us to help us understand what we can learn about this process in more detail. So usually when I give this talk, I'll have, like, you know, a slide that gives you the equations for coherent scattering and all this business. So I kind of skipped over that because I assume everyone more or less knows the physics here. This is just neutrino scattering due to vector interactions, largely with the neutron. And this is just due to the nature of the left and right couplings of the standard model. It's proportional to, and the standard model is proportional to the number of neutrons squared. Okay, so this is, you know, this gives you this coherent enhancement to the cross section. So from a if you're a nuclear physicist sitting here, and I don't think there's any sort of pure nuclear physicist here, but if you were, you get really excited because, you know, you can measure, you know, the size of the neutron sphere and the radius, you know, and the size of the neutron. But so that's actually why this thing's important for nuclear physics. What I'm going to do is start out talking about sort of the astrophysics that one can be done, and then I'll migrate into other areas, and I will try not to go overboard. You need to measure the function of Q squared, yeah. Okay. Is that a nuclear physics statement or a particle physics statement? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so let me start off with the astrophysics side here. We heard Malcolm talk a little about this morning. Let me add a little bit to this game here. So solar neutrinos, right? And once again, if this was a colloquium, I'd, you know, talk about the early 1980s and how these detectors were first, how dark matter detectors were actually first built to detect solar neutrinos and try to solve the solar neutrino problem. I don't need to go through that whole story here. We've had a solar neutrino program that's gone on over now half a century or so, and has done wonderful work detecting all these components of the solar neutrino flux. And we're left nowadays with something like this. The survival probability is a function of energy, and we have the LMA MSW solution to this problem, where we have vacuum dominated oscillations at low energy and matter dominated oscillations at high energy. Which gives us the observed survival probability. okay, so that picture is very, you know, more or less fits together. However, there's a nice recent review on solar neutrinos by Haxton and collaborators, where he made a point to say that this program of solar neutrino studies that was envisioned by the founders of this program has only been partially completed at this stage. So there's still sort of science left to do here. So the question is, what science is left to do? And really, the next major experimental effort in this game that's going to take us in a little bit of a different direction than it's been taken before is the dark matter experiments. Okay, so so what can we do there from the perspective of astrophysics? And that's what I'll start talking about here. So Raphael, so I'll re-steal the slide from Raphael. So one of basically the level zero thing that you know, what's the first dark matter detection of, you know, coherent scattering of boron 8 solar neutrinos going to do? Well, the first thing it's going to do is detect the signal. The second thing it's going to do is make the second neutral current measurement of pure neutral current measurement of the solar neutrino flux, and it's going to in the process help us resolve this issue about the metallicity of the sun. So if you've been following this sort of recent three-dimensional simulations of the solar of standard solar models and how to, you know, reproduce the metallicity of the solar photosphere seem to give you a downward revision of the metallicity, in particular the CNO elements, relative to what they were beforehand, before these more expensive simulations came out. So that's good from a theoretical perspective, but the problem is this new metallicity, lower metallicity, revised lower metallicity predictions don't really agree with helioseismology. Right now, the solar neutrino measurement from SNOW doesn't really say too much about this because it's kind of right in the middle of both predictions of the low metallicity and high metallicity solution. So one thing, the first thing that will happen is we'll get a new measurement of this neutral current process. And actually, in addition, as I'll talk about towards the end, which will be important in searches for sterile neutrinos, this will be actually the first pure neutral current energy spectrum measurement of the boron efflux, right? Okay. So that's going to be important going forward here. So this is issue one for solar neutrinos that we're going to try to address. Issue two, and this has been hinted, I believe, earlier at that there does not appear to be, when you take the sort of the standard MSW solution to the solar neutrino data, there doesn't really seem to be an upturn at low energies as is predicted by the model. Okay, so these blobs here are predictions from the high and low metallicity models. Okay, and there might be about a 2 sigma discrepancy, basically with all of the elastic scattering data at this stage. Question.
Do you know if column 2 or 8 better up than the slower bit is going to be lower at snow plus or compared to bars?
No, I don't think it'll be lower. No. And it doesn't really affect the board sediment too much either.
Well, see this movement, right? The size of the air part is much larger because of the background.
It's just because they're small detector, I think, is that they don't have that to count, and maybe just probably sense the air part. I don't think they're not hugely suffering from that.
But why is that 2 sigma? It's like half a sigma.
Yeah. Oh, well, I guess it depends on the solution here. Look at that. This is the high metallicity solution. Okay, so there's been discussion that this is hinting at new physics as well, sterile neutrinos or non-standard neutrino interactions, and I'll talk about this as well. Yeah.
I have a quick comment. The solar models, how independent are they of previous measurements?
How independent are they of previous?
The guys that are making these solar models.
Which measurements?
So they know what the measured fluxes are.
So I think, as far as I understand, they're basically decoupled from the neutrino fluxes, right? They try to model the spectra of the.
So there's no bias into.
No, there's no. Right now, really, the first order of the neutrino measurements don't really play any role in this.
Solar models existed before SNOW. Oh, yeah.
They've been updated continuously.
Yeah, but the SNOW result agreed with the original solar models from, you know, the 1980s.
Yeah.
Oh, I know, but now that this has happened, the solar models give you something where the true value is somewhere in between, right, and smack in the middle. I don't know. Maybe it's your question.
I think it's a question.
Okay, all right, so that's good. So this is issue number two. So the question is, so really this is kind of my bullet points. What in the near future can dark matter detectors do for the solar neutrino program? So here it is, and I'll briefly touch on each of these. Neutral current measurement of boron 8, low energy survival probability of solar neutrinos, particularly beryllium 7. More speculatively, if bigger detectors come online at low thresholds, we can maybe think about CNO. Okay, I'll show exactly where we need to go for that. Also, a precise measurement of the PP lumen flux from a neutrino electron elastic scattering could actually make the best quote unquote direct measurement of the neutrino luminosity of the sun. Okay, and this can better current measurements. Okay, and I'll recap what those are in a few minutes here. So the low energy survival probability. So when you're thinking about beryllium 7, so basically what I did in all these figures here. And unfortunately, you can't really see the line. So a boric CNO in most cases has flux uncertainties on their low energy components of the solar neutrino flux anywhere from, you know, tens of to a few percent. Okay, so the best measurement is from beryllium 7 component of the flux here by boric CNO. So you can really do two things here. You can assume the MSW solution and from that deduce the standard solar model flux, or you can go the other way around. There's decent consistency with this measurement and the high metallicity solution of the standard solar model. A dark matter experiment, if they can actually get to low enough thresholds, you know, maybe 20 eV or so through the coherent scattering process, can actually make the first direct measurement of the neutral current measurement of beryllium 7 flux, right? So this gives you a direct measurement of the survival probability. And so, like I said, the way these figures go is basically you go down to a threshold energy. So these are for the size of the detector, and this is the predicted uncertainty on the flux. And unfortunately, you can't see it, but the Borg-Sino line is right around here, down at a few percent, and it tells you what size of detector you need and what threshold you need to beat the current Borg-Sino limits. Okay. So this is for beryllium 7. You can play this same game with PEP, which is another low energy component of the solar neutrino flux that Borg-Sino detected. This is a little bit, this flux is degenerate with the CNO flux because the neutrino energies overlap between those two. The PEP flux is a little bit larger, and it's sort of the same matrix elements come in as the PP flux, so this is theoretically a well understood component here. So here's, you know, if you have, you know, 500 kilogram years or so, you can get a 40% measurement at low thresholds for PEP, and also if you can get up to 1 ton or so. Also, I did these for a germanium detector, okay, which is, that might be a little bit speculative to like get this big, right? But you can actually translate these to other ones if you wish. So this could improve the measurement of the PEP spectrum as well. So more speculatively, you're talking like a G3 type experiment, and I never know, I always forget like how big G2 and G3s are. So I think this sort of, you can get it like a ton scale germanium detector. You can actually get in the ball game for making the first measurement of the CNO flux, and you can get to thresholds of tens of electron volts. Okay, now I was told yesterday that Borg-Sino is currently in the process of working on a CNO measurement, and I think that's the only other active experiment that's searching for CNO, although correct me if I'm wrong, yes. But it's possible, you know, that this is a direction that these experiments could go. And of course, if you measure the CNO, then you really sort of, this is the holy grail. I think Ranjan mentioned yesterday that this is in terms of getting at the solar metallicity issue. Okay. Also, you can measure the luminosity of the sun. In particular, you can actually go through and measure what fraction of the energy is generated by the PP chain, which fraction of the energy is generated by the CNO. And this is done in the context of a global analysis. Right, so if, you know, if xenon n-ton makes a, you know, few percent measurement of the PP flux, you can actually put that through and do a global analysis with all the other measurements, and you can actually get a you can actually understand what fraction of the luminosity comes from PP relative to CNO, and ultimately, if you get down to this few percent level, you can do it without placing this so-called luminosity constraint on the solar neutrino fluxes. Okay, so the key target here is maybe a few percent or so. So right now the neutrino inferred luminosity agrees pretty well within one sigma or so with the observed luminosity of the sun. But this is sort of possible to be improved upon, these uncertainties, in the next few years. Okay, so those are things. So astrophysics, let me move over to talk about some more particle physics aspects and learning about new physics from these types of measurements. I'll show a slide which sort of motivates a lot of these types of studies. That of course is the gallium and reactor anomaly. I won't go through the details for lack of time here about why this, how these measurements are made or why they're hinting at what they're doing. Short answer is nobody probably really understands what's coming out of them yet. But the idea here is these gallium collaboration experiments, or gallium, what's the word? Starts with a C. No, the, when you put the thing in your detector.
Calibration.
That's right. Those experiments, right? Collaboration was like stuck in my head for some reason, and I couldn't get out. So when you look at those types of experiments combined with reactors, a global analysis of all the reactor experiments around the world, they may be hinting at a physics at a sterile neutrino, approximately, you know, electron volt scale or so. When the case of actually in the case of both of these, probably the biggest deal is sort of the nuclear physics uncertainties, which we don't really understand at this stage. But you know, this motivates actually further analysis along these directions. So let me talk about how to do this, as well as do other searches for new physics. And I'll try to keep this the next 5 minutes or so we can coffee at a reasonable time. So there's the two other methods I talked about to detect neutrino coherent scattering besides dark matter detectors are reactors and accelerators. So let me just briefly talk about each one of these and then finish up talking about what we can do in all cases. So reactor-based coherent neutrino scattering experiments have been going on, or attempts to search for this signal have been going on now for probably a couple decades or so. So the Texano experiment has been going on for a while. It's based on uses a gigawatt reactor or so. It hasn't been able to achieve yet the thresholds low enough to detect a signal. So really the key idea here is with all these reactor experiments is to you know, you need a reactor, of course, right? And you need detectors that are low enough thresholds to get down to reach the signal. Lots of dark matter programs are now migrating in this direction, especially those based upon ultra-low threshold detector technology, sort of superseding mass type experiments. And here's just an example of a few that have been going on around the world. Let me actually just highlight one. This is the one that I'm on, actually. So this is an experiment we started a few years ago. We have a megawatt research reactor at the Nuclear Science Center near our campus at Texas A&M University, used mostly for engineering purposes. But we have that as well as we have groups. We have a super CDMS group who fabricates the low threshold detector technology used for dark matter searches at super CDMS. So if you're able to combine those two things, you actually have a experiment that can be used to detect coherent neutrino scattering. And there's a couple of interesting aspects of this experiment relative to other experiments. So we have a megawatt reactor compared to typical sort of gigawatt reactors, say by Texano and other collaborations. So we're actually, because of this, we're actually able to get really close to the core of the reactor, probably about a meter or so is what the most recent simulations are showing it will be possible. So you can actually look for oscillations of you know, these sterile neutrinos on these very, very short baselines. And also the core is movable. Okay, so the core is movable. So at the end of the day, you can actually normalize out an uncertainty in the reactor spectrum. So you can turn that, you know, it's a reactor, so you can turn it on and off. So you have better control of your backgrounds in this context. So the shielding and the experiment is currently under design, and we hope to have an engineering run for this experiment later at the end of the year. So keep your eyes out for that. So the other experiment, which is very much complementary to reactor experiments, is the coherent experiment. And we've heard a little bit about this today. This is run out of the spallation neutron source. It's based upon a stopped pion beam. So as reactors, of course, you just get new E bar, I guess, flavors. Here, it's stopped pion beam, so you get you also get muon flavors in the beam that's coming at you. They also have, in principle, good background rejections because they have a pulsed beam. So these the stopped pion beam, of course, is a little bit higher energies, tens of MeV relative to reactors, which come out at 1 MeV or so. So there might be a bit of an issue here about, you know, do you have some, you know, incoherence in the nuclear interaction, and that's something that needs to be studied. And that's actually one thing this experiment will do, right? Try to understand the limits of this process. Okay, so. Okay, so combined together, like, what are the typical new physics reaches of these searches here? So here's just a little bit of a menu of what can go on here: non-standard interactions, neutrino magnetic moments, which would occur, which would be important typically for reactors because you need to get to very low thresholds to detect this, and also sterile neutrinos. So what I'm going to do today is finish up talking about the first and third of these non-standard interactions and sterile neutrinos. And particularly for the NSI stuff, I hope to, there's some new results, which at least I'm pretty excited about, that I would like to share with you guys. Okay, so here's NSI in a very brief nutshell here. So we're dealing with neutral current, non-standard neutrino interactions. You can, of course, also have charge current interactions. The charge current cases tend to be a little bit more constrained than the neutral current cases. For the neutral current case, you can have matter-induced oscillations. Okay, you can you can probe non-standard interactions three different ways. And when you produce the neutrinos, as the neutrinos propagate to you, that would be the matter-induced oscillation effect. Also in detection. Okay, so the cross-section for the interaction changes, right, if you have some sort of non-standard interaction. So there's lots of confusion in the literature, at least from my perspective, as far as how, you know, how to define these epsilons. So in this case here, it's defined as the strength relative to the Fermi interaction. So here's the coherence cross-section. I believe this was first written down about 12 or so years ago by Branco et al. And so here's the, so if these things are of course set to zero, then you get the standard old coherence cross-section. Okay, so you're probing for these things here in the interaction. And these are neutral current effects, okay, that we're looking for. Okay, so so here's a couple examples of the reaches of these guys here. So coherent is actually sensitive to, like I said, it's also sensitive to not only the EE, but the mu mu components of the NSIs. So really the big things here that that these experiments will give you is they'll give you sensitive to the non-universal couplings, right? The U's, the ups and the downs. And typically the results presented here are shown in these planes. So here's for the EE up versus EE down, the vector components for the accelerators. And this is just these sort of blobs tell you sort of what you'd expect the constraint to be relative to the truth. So if the truth here is the standard model, 0, 0, this is the constraint you can get. And also the key thing here is you have a huge degeneracy when you just run at with one type of detector, but you actually can break that degeneracy if you run with several different types of detectors, and that's what was done here. So in this example, xenon, germanium, and cesium iodide is what Coherent uses. Last I heard, I think Coherent cannot use xenon because they're supposed to get it from Russia, and now like there's embargoes on importing xenon from Russia for some political reason I don't understand. But anyway, so reactors, same thing actually happens, right? So if you have, say, a germanium silicon detector, with one of these, say with germanium, you got a huge degeneracy beyond the scope of this figure here, but then when you combine them, sort of the constraints tilt enough that you can actually close this and get a decent bound. I think this was done here for, this was done for a 400 electron volt threshold, which hasn't been achieved yet at these types of detectors, but it's something I think that reasonably can happen soon, you know, hopefully with something like the MINER experiment. Okay. Also, interestingly here for the last couple minutes here, let me talk about how this interplays with solar neutrino analysis. So a very interesting thing happens when you bring in NSI. You can actually still have large NSI couplings, and you can have the so-called dark side solution to the solar neutrino problem, basically, where you flip the octant of theta 1, 2, and you have an ambiguity in the mass ordering of the mixing angles. So oscillation experiments are actually sensitive to a degenerate combination of the diagonal components here of the NSI coefficient. So here's a so-called dark side regime. Okay, that's actually still allowed if you have large-scale NSIs. Here's the light side regime, I guess, that's still allowed from the oscillation experiments. And the way to break this degeneracy is if you bring in, so in this case, they did it with the coherent experiments, and they said, okay, if the truth is the standard model here, this is the constraints you get on these parameters. And as you can see here, the key point here is none of these overlap with the dark side. Okay, so if you, you can have a complementary situation when you bring in these scattering experiments with the oscillation experiments. There is some constraint on at this stage from a deep inelastic scattering data, Charm and Nutev, on these types of models, but really these coherent experiments will really help for these types of analyses. All right, what will these do with solar neutrinos? Let me just finish up talking about this here. So the studies go back to over 10 years now, talking about how NSI affects their survival probability for solar neutrinos. So low energies doesn't matter, high energy doesn't matter, or you can make it not matter at least. But you can actually then make it matter in this transition regime, which hasn't really been measured very well at all. Okay, and this is if you want some hints of new physics, this is where this could actually happen. And of course, when you kind of come in here and put in new physics, then you might actually start to say something about that, you know, lack of upturn in the MSW solutions at low energies here. Okay, so this is still very plausible. And you can actually, so we can actually put this effect in the full three flavor oscillation models with NSI involved and do the solar neutrino analysis and propagate this through and see what you'd expect to see in a dark matter detector. So this analysis was done by Xu Liao, a graduate student at Texas A&M, who really did an outstanding job in this analysis. And he actually went through all the NSI coefficients and predicted given the constraints you have from the other experiments, such as the oscillation, deep and elastic scattering data, et cetera, how high and how low can you raise the neutrino flux at dark matter detectors in order to change it relative to the standard signals? And you can actually increase it or decrease it, actually. So here's a couple of examples here. So here's the standard number of events for some assumed threshold, I believe, in xenon. I think we assumed 1 keV in this case. And you can either decrease it or increase it, which is really cool. And you can actually also say something, I am showing it explicitly here, but you can actually say something about this dark side solution as well. So if this dark side solution exists, right, is real, this actually should show up as an observable signal in a dark matter detector with exposure, say, only of a few ton years or so and moderate thresholds. And so here's the band here that one would predict for the range of parameters, like when you vary the NSI coefficients as much as you can possibly vary them, right? This is the range of signals you would be the uncertainty, if you will, on the signals at dark matter experiments. And these would be the example survival probabilities, which are still consistent with the observed survival probability. So there's actually still some new physics reach for these types of experiments here. In this case, in particular, right away we can probably say something about the dark side solution once we start detecting boron neutrinos here. Okay, so sterile neutrinos. So going back to the MINER experiment. Right, we have this movable core, right? So here's the blobs that are consistent with the reactor and gallium anomalies. And here's projections from the SOX experiment for what their constraints could be in this parameter space. So we believe a realistic reactor setup with a low enough threshold. In this case, we used something pretty aggressive, which is about 10 electron volts. Right now, we're sort of aiming for 100 EV thresholds. You can actually set the world's best limits, or maybe even verify this sterile neutrino signal with these types of searches. You can also do the sterile neutrino searches using solar neutrinos. And this is an analysis we wrote up a few years ago. There was a recent analysis of searching for sterile neutrinos with the coherent experiments, right? And what I didn't put the figure up here, but they are sensitive to some fraction of this parameter space as well. So let me just finish up here. So here's our three-pronged attack, I guess, if you will, on neutrino coherent scattering. You know, this is, you know, I don't think this is a boring signal, right? This is a signal, right? It might be boring, but I think there's something to do here, and I think we, you know, in the next few years, this is a realistic target for us to hit from many different perspectives. And you know, I hope I've convinced you this touches on a few different interesting areas of physics and astrophysics. So I think if anyone has any questions, I'll just take them now. Yes.
So could one use external sources like the SOX to actually look for coherent scattering? SOX is going to have
What's the energy of the source?
Well, it's sort of up to 2.5.
Oh, yeah, sure. Why not? Actually, why hasn't that been thought about yet? Is it chromium 50? What's the source?
SOX. They discussed two types, right? The one that I've seen the latest is this
So right now, I think the answer is yes. I don't see why it's not, right? So you need that in combination with the low threshold technology, right? And if you had both, I don't see why you can't do this, right? I mean, nothing special about, you know, the megawatt reactor we have on campus, right? It's just, you know, we also have detectors that are reasonably capable of finding this.
So what is the recoil energy for one MeV neutrino?
Tens to hundreds of electron volts. Anywhere from, you know, tens to hundreds of electron volts. Actually, I don't have a spectrum here, but it actually rises very steeply. You have to really get to 100 electron volts or below to really.
Super CMS high voltage or DIC detectors?
High voltage.
The reactors can provide, of course, much higher fluxes.
That's right, yeah.
But they also provide neutrons.
So one paper we published on this, right, is all about understanding the neutron backgrounds. And actually, that's still a process designing the shielding. And that's sort of.
That's what the weight is the gate source.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think the short answer, if you think over this range, 100 electron volts and above, it's not. We have a rather big signal here, right? So we don't need to get down to, like, what is it, 0 DRUs or whatever. We need to, something like 10 to 200s are okay.
I mean, these scattered neutrino signals seem to be the theory.
Oh, yeah, I forgot, you're right, yeah. So Dia Bay, right, didn't they publish something? I guess this is a little bit degenerate with what's going on with this 5 MeV bump, and they're all kind of maybe related to each other. I saw something in physics today about Dia Bay. I don't think I've seen a paper. Do they have a paper? No.
The 5 MeV bump is not from Stirling.
No, it's not from Stirling neutrinos, but it might be some.
That is purely nuclear physics.
Oh yeah, but I'm saying that might be degenerate with understanding the normalization.
I
think Dia Bay does have a paper.
Yeah, but recently I think what they realized is that the reactor anomaly is not due to stress, because I think they sort of shut down some of the reactors or things like that.
Yeah.
They have enough statistics, they can look at the evolution of the fuel.
Yes,
and
that's right.
And the core, yeah. And then look at the spectrum.
Yes.
And the difference in anomaly, yes, as a function of the fuel composition. So they can trace the misunderstanding of the,
yes,
flux to one component, which is the
U235. I think that's not completely gone away. I think that it has just decreased. They have not completely explained it.
It's not explained yet, but it's easier to, if it were sterile neutrinos, you would see it.
That's what I think.
Is dominating in the burning in the core. But if you say that, it's not really deficit at this point when you're more enriching U235, but there's, yes, more when you're less, then that's pointing to just a misunderstanding of the calculation, yes, of that one particular component of 235 more. Whatever it is, it's
I have a question. I know there are a lot of experiments around attempting to measure this coherence gap, and most probably, very soon we will get out of the stuff.
I have
enough data. So then all these other activities, they still make sense?
No, I think they still make sense, because coherence is measuring the cross-section at, so their neutrino beam is, energies, characteristic of the stop pi on neutrinos, right? So tens of MeV, whereas the reactor, so you're measuring the cross section at different energies. So if you, and they'll even tell you, we need to measure it in different detectors to see the N squared dependence, right? So I think, want to see the N squared dependence as well as the energy dependence. So I think, I don't know the exact details of where they're at yet, but I think there's neutron backgrounds I think they're dealing with. In particular, they have to use this lead shielding. And there's these neutrino-induced neutrons from the lead, I think, that are a deal for them to work out. Yeah.